crack.
Why did I think you could do this? This one simple thing. It's like I'm talking to a monkey.
Whoa, now.
A really, really big, stupid monkey named Crack.
Ouch.
And do you want to know something else? I've never liked your spinach puffs. Never!
Hi, I'm Joe.
And I'm Tiana.
And this is Next Door Villain,
a podcast where we uncover the villains to discover their humanity. Okay. Joe, we've been doing this podcast for a long time.
Yep.
We've laughed, we've cried. Well, I cried. You know, since 2018,
2017, actually.
2017? That's a long time. And I'm so appreciative that you've been my co-host.
Why am I getting nervous?
But I'm so sorry, but I found someone new and I have to let you go.
I don't know what to say. I don't.
Think of it as we're going in a different direction. You're being downsized. Your department's being downsized. You're fired. Okay.
Oh my God. What am I going to do with my life now that I'll have a few hours a week more of free time?
I know, right? Oh, I could not keep a straight face through that. But just kidding.
Speaking of all the time that we put into this podcast, we have some exciting news for all of you listeners out there. We have put together a Patreon.
Woo!
It's the cool thing that all the podcasters are doing, and we finally decided to do it ourselves.
Yes.
We're hoping that you'll go on and use it to support us a little bit, because we put a lot of work and time and energy into this podcast. We care about it. We're passionate about it, but it is a lot of work and it does take a lot of time. I know I have a full-time job. Tiana doesn't, but
not anymore. I did through the majority of this podcast, just not right now for various reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. But you've also got a lot going on, and you've got a lot coming up as well. So this podcast does take a lot of time, and we really appreciate all of you who listen. And now we're wondering if you'd like to support us. And if you do want to support us, we've got a bunch of like cool special things for you in turn. So go to patreon.com/nextdoorvillain, and you can see our three levels of support. The first one is you can be officially a baddie for just, get this, $3 a month.
Nice.
Yeah. So like that would be like if you like didn't want to have one cup of coffee a month, if you just cut one cup of coffee, which is healthy, and had water instead, or an apple, if you had an apple that day instead of a cup of coffee, you could afford to help support what we do, and we would so appreciate it. And with that, you would get exclusive voting power to help select which villain that we'll cover in the coming month. We'll give you some options. You can vote on them. And whatever our Patreon listeners say, that is what we will do. You will have that power.
Power. Villainous power.
And as you all know, villains love power. And so you'll also get access to all of our episodes. We've got over 70 episodes now, and we're going to leave a lot of them up on this feed because we think that podcasts should be equitable and people should be able to listen to all of our great content. So we're going to leave probably 30 or 40 episodes, our favorite ones, up for everyone to listen to. And then the rest are going to be available to our Patreon subscribers alone. So you will have access to our full back catalog, everything we've ever recorded, and also probably some bonus content. We've got some ideas for some other little things that we're going to throw in there as well. We don't know exactly what those are yet, but they will be available for our Patreon subscribers. That's just level one.
There will be some one-on-one chats to help you through the villain in your life for higher tiers, as well as me doing TikToks about your favorite villains. For the higher tiers. What else will there be?
Tiana will write you once a month. She'll write a haiku for you about a villain of your choice. We'll also have a quarterly exclusive patron-only live video chat that you'll be able to participate in as a patron of ours. A couple other small cool things. I would encourage you, if you're at all interested, or if you just want to support us and support what we do and help us continue to make episodes and put out this content for you, patreon.com/nextdoorvillain. The link will also be in the show notes for this episode if you want to click on them there. Again, we really appreciate your support and love if you were able to join us for just a little bit more support with a little bit of money. Now that we got that business out of the way,
I want to ask you something, though.
Me.
Before we move on.
Yeah.
I want to ask you how you felt when I fired you.
Based on the fact that you appeared to be almost giggling the entire time, I had like a little bit of a suspicion that it was fake. Though I was nervous at what I was wondering might come out of your mouth, I don't think I felt it was a serious threat when I heard it.
What if I'd actually fired you? How would you feel?
A little dejected. Yeah, if I ever got fired, it would really kind of hit to it. Because I'm someone who really thrives on validation from others. I'm not saying that's a good thing. It's sort of the reality of my life. And actually, I don't know if you know this, but I did get fired once from a job.
Really?
Yeah, it was my first job out of college.
I didn't know this.
I just graduated. I got a job serving beer at a local bar that just like had it was a bar that had a ton of beer. I won't throw them under the bus, but they had a lot of beer and like 50 beers on tap. It was
wow.
Anyways, so I got the job. I was there for a couple of weeks. I thought I was doing fine. And if I wasn't doing fine, no one told me. I went in for a shift one day, and then I came home, and then I got a phone call from my boss, and she was like, hey, you don't need to come back to work again, and if you bring your shirt back in, we'll reimburse that for you on your final paycheck. And I was like...
Did she say why?
No, and I was so, like, taken aback. I didn't think to ask. And I also didn't take my shirt back because I was like, I'm going to drive 20 minutes across town to give them this, like, polo shirt back.
That's such a red flag that they didn't tell you why or they didn't want to work on it with you.
It was pretty hurtful. I was constantly wondering why because I didn't think I was doing a bad job. And I sort of feel like as a manager now, I would never fire an employee before first sort of coaching them or like approaching them and trying to see how they could improve or like tell them what they could do better and give them that opportunity. So yeah, it's really hurtful to be fired, especially when you've not really done anything or there's no like clear reason why. Yeah, it put me in a real bad spot to be fired from my first job after graduation that was not even like a prestigious job. It was like an entry level minimum wage job serving beer.
Maybe an employee who'd been there longer just didn't like you for whatever reason or something, and the manager felt they needed to do something, or it was probably something dumb.
I think they just didn't like me. Like the staff was like really tight knit. And to be fair, like I'm really shy and a little bit awkward in new settings amongst new people. And this whole staff was like all buddy buddy with each other. And I think I just didn't really fit in with their group or they didn't give me time to fit in. So anyways, so that's my story. I feel like you're getting to a point that might have to relate to our villain today, who we haven't even mentioned yet. Who are we talking about today, Tiana?
We are talking about Yzma from The Emperor's New Groove, who, by the way, was fired by Cusco, the emperor, which is why I did that little dramatic skit in the beginning that hurt Joe.
I feel like this was really kind of a super underrated Disney film. It's sort of a different vibe than the other Disney films. I feel like it's more just like humorous and ridiculous.
They've got good one-liners.
Yeah. And there's sort of like a really long storied history with this film, which I won't get into too much, but it was sort of put into production in 1994. And it didn't come out until, what, 1999? And the story was, like, completely rewritten a couple of times. A lot of the actors were swapped out, and it almost didn't get made. And then when it finally did get made, it was sort of, the animation was sort of thrown together. So it's almost shocking that this film ended up getting made. And I'm glad that it did, because it gave us a bunch of really fun characters. We actually did a mini episode on Kronk a couple of years ago, so go check that out if you haven't already. It's a real fun one. But today it's all about the main villain, Yzma.
I love Yzma, and I've learned a thing or two. So I'm going to talk a little bit
tell
more
us about
Yzma. Yzma and the Emperor's New Groove. So first I want to ask you this, Joe. What is the culture and society that the Emperor's New Groove is based on?
I think it's South American for sure. Probably like Peruvian culture, maybe?
Yeah. My God, you're so smart.
I was a Spanish minor in college.
That's true. Yeah, that helps. It's based on the Inca Empire, which spanned Western South America and includes the region that is now called Peru. And the Emperor's New Groove specifically takes place in the region of what is now Peru.
You might get into this later already, but I want to know, did they do a good job with getting the culture right?
I'm going to answer your question. Just sit tight.
All right. I think I know the answer, to be honest. But I'll let you get to it.
I mean, it's Disney. All right. The Inca Empire, it existed from the early 1400s until the 1530s, until the Spaniards, those damn colonizers, invaded, killed Incas, and took over the Inca Empire.
One of the damn colonizers.
Yes. One of the damn colonizers, the conquistadors. And even, like, Inca leaders also tried going against the Spaniards, even up until 1575, but then the Inca Empire eventually dissolved. The Emperor's New Groove is not historically accurate. I'm pretty sure the real Inca Emperor did not bump into an old man and say, "You threw off my groove," that I wasn't there. But I don't think that happened.
Wait, that's the bizarre thing you picked out of this movie? The main character gets turned into a llama, but it's unbelievable that he bumped into someone and said,
"Pretty much,
you messed up my groove."
It's an American cartoon. Obviously, it's not 100% accurate, but the animators did design the setting, clothing, and decorations or art on the walls and buildings to look Inca. The animators seemed to have tried with this. I'm not going to claim that it's all accurate. But there are real Inca items that you can look at that are like in museums. You can look at architecture that looks similar to what is animated in the film. So I still want to tell people a little bit more about the Inca Empire in case they're interested, just because this is supposedly the setting in which Yzma is in. Doesn't have a whole lot of weight. It's still an American cartoon, but it's still interesting. And I think it's good for people to learn something. So here's a very short breakdown of the Inca Empire. If you want to learn more, though, there's so much more information that you can learn. I'm just going to do a very, very quick overview. So about the real Inca Empire, their capital was Cusco.
And the name of the main character in The Emperor's New Groove.
Yes, indeed. So smart. I'm kind of talking to you like I talk to my cat. Like, my cat will, like, do something, and I'll be like, "Oh, you're so cute, and you're so smart." I don't know why, but I have those same emotions coming up right now when you say something. I'm not being sarcastic. Okay. They're known for their architecture, especially stonework, finely woven textiles, agricultural innovations, road network, worship of the sun god Inti. So you notice how Cusco, the main character in the movie, has, like, a sun-like headpiece on his head, and it's kind of, I think, an homage to, like, the sun god, right? They're also known for their use of knotted strings called quipu, for record keeping and communication and more. They're also known for not using money in their society. So they would use like labor, food, etc. to kind of pay each other, especially between the empire and the people. So like the empire would, they would say, you give me your labor or fulfill your military obligation and I'll give you feasts.
Yeah, and they would just like post that on the local Facebook swap group.
Exactly. No.
Facebook groups are sort of the modern Inca empire. No. Please don't quote me on that if you're listening.
Another tidbit, Inca men and women valued long hair. Women would put their hair into long braids and wrapped it with brightly colored woolen bands. Clothing also indicated status. So, very fast overview, okay? Inca Empire. Read about it. I have another question for you. Why is Yzma purple? Or where? Why does she wear purple?
Because purple is Disney's favorite color for villains.
What other villain wears purple besides Yzma?
You know, in my mind, that was like a thing, but now I'm like, maybe not. Maybe it's just we use the color purple for our podcast.
That's true. Ursula is
maybe Ursula.
Black and purple.
Wasn't there a purple villain in the Black Cauldron? Was that even a Disney film?
Seen that.
All right. Purple just seems villainous to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I suspect there might, you asked me because there's a reason.
Yes. Wiki villain said that purple is the color of madness and royalty.
Yes, and Wiki Villain is actually a sponsor of this podcast. It's where we like to go to get all of our villain information from the open world wide web. Check them out at wikivillain.com. Promo code NEXTDOORVILLAIN. I'm joking. That's a joke.
Yeah. It is a joke.
I want to tell our listeners that's a joke. I don't want them to go try to give Wiki Villains money. I want them to give us money on our Patreon, patreon.com/nextdoorvillain, if you'd like to support what we do. Anyways, sorry, purple color.
Yes, purple. I knew it was royalty, but I didn't know it was the color of madness, which, I don't know, anything can represent madness if you want it to, but...
Yeah. Are you going to tell us about Yzma at all? Are we going to talk about the villain?
I am. Okay. Yzma, facts. She practically raised Kuzco. She says this in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So you can picture Yzma like changing his diaper and goo goo gaga.
And Kuzco is the quote unquote hero of the film.
Yes.
The young emperor.
Yes. She says when she's in a fit of rage after he fires her that I practically raised him, which...
Not practically. She actually raised him from what I understand.
Yes.
His father, the actual emperor, when he disappeared, he was like, hey, Yzma, you want to just like watch after my kid and not take over the kingdom while I'm gone? But she tried.
People describe her as, quote unquote, scary beyond all reason. She's old in this movie and people are really perplexed by that. People are like, wow, a person is old. Like people get old. Like they're really like shocked and just their entire world is just shattered because this woman is old.
I wonder, like I'm not an expert on this culture, but I think that most people, regardless of culture, didn't live as long as they do now. Right?
Yeah, if you want to say that, you know, it takes place in like the 1500s or the late 1400s. Yeah, I don't know how old. I don't know how old they were living.
Maybe it's significant how old she is and maybe her,
like
her potions and stuff have helped her live longer. I'm not sure. But yeah, there is definitely a fascination with her age. There's this great scene early on in the film when Yzma and Kuzco are talking and Kuzco just can't even focus because he's just so like, he's so like blown away by how many wrinkles there are all over her face and this piece of spinach stuck in her teeth that he wonders how many years that's been there.
I think it's more like just a stab at how, at least in American culture, right? When you are in like a sexist society.
Our society.
Women aren't taken as seriously when they get older or they're ignored or a little bit invisible. I think that's changing.
Men become honorable and esteemed as they get older.
Yes.
Women just sort of fade away.
Yeah. So I kind of interpreted that as like maybe the creators were kind of joking at how society does that, you know, like, oh my God, she's old. Like, crazy. I can't believe a woman is old and she's existing. Like, how dare she?
Yeah. Sort of that inherent cultural sexism in America creeping in there.
Right. Another fact, she's bald underneath her headpieces that she wears. I really like her headpieces. I'm really not going to claim that they're accurate. I'm not going to claim that they're what people in the Inca Empire wore, because some of her headpieces are like really flowy and like feathery and like, and I don't know if that's accurate or not, but she loves style, right?
Yeah. One thing about Yzma that I love is how stylish she is. And we see her in like so many different outfits and so many different looks, so much glamour, which a lot of Disney villains in particular get kind of one look for the entire film.
Yeah.
Her outfits are like constantly changing. She's like,
that's true.
Yeah. Totally doing different things. And it's, I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah. And so the story, just to jog people's memory, Emperor Cusco, who she practically raised, fires her because she's caught trying to do his job and like sitting in the emperor's seat. So she gets really upset about that. And she then plots to kill him because he fired her.
Unfairly, I might add, because she was really doing the job he should have been doing, or trying to do the job he should have been doing.
Yes. But he was late because he was like roasting some women when he was figuring out who to marry. Like, so he was busy roasting people. Yeah.
When she was trying to explain why she was doing that, that was when he like couldn't hear her because he was so focused on all her wrinkles. And then, yeah, he fires her.
So when she tries to kill him with Kronk, the vials of potions get switched up and she and Kronk accidentally turn Cusco into a llama. He's a llama! Kronk tries to get rid of Cusco, the llama, but we know he fails to actually kill him thanks to Kronk's shoulder angels. And then Cusco gets on Pacha's cart instead and gets taken home with Pacha. Yzma finds out Cusco's still alive as a llama, and she and Kronk try looking everywhere for Cusco. Later, everyone reaches the palace. Yzma and the guards chase Pacha and Cusco everywhere. And Yzma kind of explains, I'm going to kill you, right? Like, you fired me, I'm going to kill you. And Cusco's like, you're going to kill me, Yzma? And Yzma replies, think of it as you're being let go. That your life's going in a different direction. That your body's part of a permanent outplacement. Which is similar to what Cusco said when he first fired her. And that is a really cool part. And I get very satisfied when she said that part. I got goosebumps. After some shenanigans with being chased around and with vials of potions flying everywhere, Cusco gets to turn back into a human and Yzma becomes a cat. And enrolls in Kronk's camp where she learns how to talk to squirrels as a cat. So that is the fast lowdown of Yzma in The Emperor's New Groove. The end, she's a cat. Meow.
Yeah, great. So empathy time. I want you to sort of introduce your theme first, because mine is a little bit more obscure.
Yeah. So how can I see this from Yzma's perspective?
Yeah.
So I feel kind of close to Yzma these days because I recently played her.
You played? You? Wait, what?
I acted as Yzma. It was a contest where you recite someone else's poem as a video and you send it in. And I don't know the results yet. I don't know if I've... Basically, this Yzma was the subject of this poem. So it was a poem written from Yzma's perspective. I did not write it. Someone else did. But I decided to take it on, dress up as her, and play her. So I feel closer to her because I needed to do some work in thinking about who she is and what she's like. And the biggest thing that I saw was that I really had to up my energy and my excitement and my spontaneity. And I needed to be comfortable with extremes, with being happy and excited and just hyper, to being angry and switching. Because you know how throughout the movie, she's like mad at Kronk because he switched the vials. But then before that, she was like, I'm going to kill him. And she gets really excited. And she goes through these extremes. And she has so much life and energy kind of underneath her physical self.
For as old as she is, she runs around like she's a child. Like the amount,
yes.
I can't believe the amount of energy that woman has.
And I think, like, if you have so much life and energy and innovation, like with her potions and with her, you know, scientific experiments, like if you have so much life, energy, and innovation to offer the world, and the person, aka Cusco, who you've been around for his entire life, can't see that value that you have, I think it prompts rage. People don't want to see these aspects of Yzma because they can't stop thinking about her age, and it's really frustrating. I think the lesson is just to examine, like, the energy and brilliance behind how someone looks. And we all know this, right? But sometimes it's good to just have a reminder, right? Like, you can look at someone and they're just sitting there quietly, but if you take time to, like, know them, you're going to notice a lot of energy and brilliance and beauty that just kind of flows out of them and flows beyond their physical self. I guess just notice the energy and the beauty and the brilliance underneath how people seem.
Yeah. We're primarily talking about the Emperor's New Groove here, but there is actually sort of a whole universe, a whole Disney universe created around this film and these characters. There's like a cartoon series, there's like a sequel film that add a lot of color and backstory to these characters. So we're not going to go to that too in depth today because we really want to focus on this one film. But Yzma is sort of revealed to have a history of when she was younger being sort of bullied. The other kids in her school called her Pigeon Legs. That was her nickname, and she was really ashamed of it. She had a family who she's really close with, but was also like really intense in a lot of ways. And there was a lot of pressure to succeed and to like go out in the world and do big things. I guess that's all to say that there are a lot of layers to her. She's not just, like you said, some old lady.
Yeah.
Also important to consider that Cusco was not a good ruler. His sort of journey in the film is that he starts as someone who's very self-absorbed and self-obsessed. And then throughout the course of the film, he learns to sort of at least a little bit think about others. But in the start of the film, when Yzma is the advisor to the Emperor and she's sort of trying to do his job while he's busy, I think we have to remember that he was a terrible emperor. And so the fact that she was trying to take over does not necessarily make her bad. And in fact, it might actually make her good because Cusco sucked. Like, he didn't care about the people at all. So in one regard, you can sort of think of her as an attempted hero for this film, trying to, you know, take over a bad regime and do her own thing with it.
Yeah.
I mean, Yzma may not have been a great ruler. So I'm not arguing that she was going to be better than Cusco was.
Right.
But we already knew that Cusco was bad, so, you know, let's give her a chance, maybe.
Let's see how it goes. Obviously, Kronk saw something in her. Maybe we should give her a chance if she has Kronk approval.
Yeah.
I will love anything Kronk loves. Spinach puffs, Yzma, getting jacked.
Yeah. What I want to talk about is a little more obscure. I want to talk about witches. I know that Yzma is not technically a witch, but I think she sort of fulfills the witch trope that kind of exists in our society today. She doesn't have magical powers necessarily. She's sort of a mad scientist, but like the things that she does with her potions are, in a sense, magical. And in that way, she sort of represents what I think is maybe sort of an overdone and negative trope in pop culture, which is the old woman evil witch or the old hag that ruins everything and that they have all these like special abilities and they're going to use them for evil to take people down or to like take over. I did a little bit of research on this. I found a great article in The Guardian written by Madeline Miller, who is one of my favorite authors. She wrote The Song of Achilles, which is sort of a feminist gay retelling of the Iliad from the perspective of Achilles' lover. Anyways, the article she wrote is called From Circe to Clinton, Why Powerful Women Are Cast as Witches. And one of the things that she talks about is how when women have power, particularly sorcery or things that can't be explained, they become a threat. And there's sort of a reason why women have historically been persecuted for being witches, because in society, women have never really had power. Men, for thousands and thousands of years in most cultures, have had most of the power. So witches, with their ability to do magic, it sort of gives them a way to rise above men. And I think that's in a lot of ways why witches have always been so scary and why witches have so often been female and why they're always evil, right? Male witches or wizards, warlocks, like we have a lot of good wizards in culture, you know, like, you know, Merlin and Dumbledore and Gandalf, all them. And we have good witches too, Hermione and Glinda. But we have an abundance of evil witches. It's a really sexist thing. Hillary Clinton is the perfect example of that. Because she was a woman who was in such a powerful position, she was just often compared to a witch. Because, like, we have to find ways. We don't have to. I'm sort of saying that in, like, a sarcastic sense. In our culture, men feel threatened when women have power of any sort. And so I felt that there was sort of a natural connection there between that evil witch trope and Yzma, in the sense that, like, simply because she had these powers, she's sort of seen as evil. Do you know what I'm getting at? I feel like I'm sort of like, if women have power, they must be evil, but they can only get power by using sorcery because they aren't given anything. We've talked about this in other episodes, like how so many female characters have telekinetic abilities, and how it's sort of like this way for them to take power in a culture that doesn't give them any sort of inherent power just because they are women.
Yeah, Yzma's a badass with those potions.
Yeah, we haven't talked about that much, but like she knows her stuff, apparently.
So I do have a question to help us further relate to Yzma. A lot of people say that she is scary beyond all reason. Like they ask around, like, did you see a woman who's scary beyond all reason? Yeah, I did. She went that way. So tell me about a time you were scary beyond all reason.
This is going to seem like a cop-out answer.
Okay.
But I don't think I've ever been scary beyond all reason. I mean, I think it would be a stretch to even say that I've ever been scary, to be honest. And I think that is sort of like interesting in and of itself. Like, I've never yelled at someone. I don't think
that's impressive.
I have no memory of ever yelling at someone. Like, the ability to yell doesn't seem like something that's within my capability. I don't think I've ever done it. I've yelled like sometimes when acting. Even then, it still feels like pretty lame. Like, I think I'm probably a pretty bad actor at yelling. But it's just like being scary just isn't in my blood. And so in a way, this is actually something I admire about Yzma. Her ability to sort of wear these powerful emotions on her sleeve. And for some reason, like powerful emotions, like, can sometimes be scary and intense, but they do often serve a purpose. They allow us to, like, get things done and like make things happen quickly and intensely, and to get our points across really effectively, as long as we don't use them too much. Like, you can't use anger and yelling all the time, but every now and then it can be a really good way to, like, motivate someone who's doing something wrong or doing something bad, or just to get the point across that you're serious about something. And that's something I am not good at. And I sometimes have employees at work that I'm really frustrated with, and I'm so even-tempered and mild-mannered that I worry that when I sit down and talk with them, they don't get the seriousness of what I'm trying to explain to them. And I wish that I had a little more of that edge, like Yzma has, that can be scary sometimes. You know, I don't want my employees to be scared of me, but sometimes I want them to be a little bit scared about doing something that's like not appropriate at work, you know?
Yeah, you want them to take you seriously.
Yeah, I can't really think of a time I've been scared beyond reason, but in a sense, I wish that I could. I wish that I had that. Not that I don't have the ability, but just I haven't been able to actualize it.
And I think you should be proud that you've never yelled at anyone. I have, and I'm not proud of that. 0 out of 10, would not recommend it. It can also backfire. It can cause a lot of tension. And it also depends on how you define scary beyond all reason. Because even in the movie, they don't really explain why. Like, is it how she looks? Is it because of her emotions? Is it all of the above?
Yeah, it's kind of a funny descriptor, like, because she doesn't seem that scary because the scary things she does in the film are also so goofy and silly that it's hard to envision that. But yeah, you're right.
She's also like this little toothpick, you know, like kind of coming at you like, yeah. And I'd be more, if Kronk got angry, I'd probably be a little more scared.
Have you been scary beyond all reason?
I will tell you actually about a time that I thought you were scary beyond all reason, but it's a different definition of it.
Very interesting.
Once I went to your house in college, not your actual house, I think you were renting it. I don't know if you owned it. I don't think you did. We were going to drink and there was all this alcohol like in your house. And you were like, I haven't eaten anything. To me, I was like, oh, that's really scary because like if I don't eat anything and if I drink, like that's a disaster for like vomiting later that night, having a bad hangover. And you were like, I don't care. It's cheaper. It's cheaper to just get drunk with nothing else in your stomach.
It's technically true, but I don't stand by it today.
Right. I mean, we're all older and wiser. Yeah, we're not in college
hydrate,
anymore, but
be sufficiently fed and then have a few safe drinks if you want to have a good night.
Yeah. And that was when I was like, damn, that's kind of scary.
I'm sorry I put you through that. I made a lot of bad choices in college.
I mean, I wasn't like scared of you. I just kind of thought you were some scary vibes. Like, I didn't even eat a Subway sandwich. I just drank. Anywho, I will tell you about a time I have been scary beyond all reason. It's going to need more context, but
okay.
Back in 2020, that wonderful year, just glorious. It was like July 2020, and I was going to brush my teeth, and I picked up my toothbrush, and I said, my toothbrush was too light. Like, the toothbrush is already a light object, but it was even lighter than usual when I felt it. When I picked up the toothbrush, it was too light, and I was scared. I freaked out, Joe. I freaked out because I thought there was something wrong with my brain. I went over the edge, all right? I picked up a toothbrush and I thought I had like a traumatic brain issue because I would pick up an object that was kind of light, like maybe like this necklace here, right? And it's light and a necklace is usually always light, but it was even lighter. It was even lighter to me. And I freaked out and I told Alex like, I don't know what's happening, but this is so light. And I started punching the bed and I was just crying because I thought something was wrong with my brain. Some context, right? A month earlier, I had gone into the ER because of a very unique migraine and it stopped my ability to speak for about an hour and a half, or I could only really speak gibberish and I could speak some words, but I had stroke-like symptoms, but it wasn't actually a stroke, thank God. I went to the ER. I was there for like 4 hours. They did a CT scan. Everything was okay, but then they referred me to a neurologist. And the neurologist saw me before this whole freakout thing happened, and he said, you're a really strange specimen. What happened to you with this migraine was very strange, he said. And he also thought it was strange that I could lift my left eyebrow by itself, but not my right by itself. But I can lift both at the same time. But he was just fascinated, like I was some in a museum, and he was like, wow, that's crazy that you can only lift your left eyebrow. And so he scheduled an MRI for me because he just wanted to make sure that my brain was okay. So I go and I do this MRI and I have to wait for the results. This freakout happened within the 4 or 5 days I had to wait for my results. So I had like health anxiety up to the max, right? My brain was fine. Everything was fine. But I couldn't get over how light I couldn't get over how light the toothbrush was. And I was very scary beyond all reason. But I'm fine. That is past.
Yeah, a very silly story, but yeah, one of those stories, and I think we all have them, where it sounds ridiculous to describe from the place you're at now, but like in the moment is like pretty freaky.
Yeah, and that's in the past now. I have my health anxiety under control. Everything's fine. I just had to be scary beyond all reason. Just watch, some of our listeners are going to be like, I'm going to go pick up a toothbrush. I'm going to see how it feels. No, don't do that. Don't overthink the toothbrush. Just use the goddamn toothbrush. Don't overthink it. Just use it and go to bed.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, on that note, Tiana, you have a poem to share with us? An Yzma poem?
I do. I have a poem written from the perspective of Yzma, which will help us further understand this crazy purple lady.
Let's do it.
Okay. I'd rather not do this, dear Emperor. If you agreed, we'd get out of here. If you agreed, I'd ride on your gangly llama back into the forest, and I wouldn't complain. We'd gallop on the hills that have gloriously dripped color over our empire. We'd trample over fields that sprung ingredients for spinach puffs, and the peasants would provide us golden onions along the way, calling out as we flew by, go, our elegant rulers. We'd catch the breeze as we trailed to Machu Picchu and notice how the clouds touch the edge of the mountain so delicately, the same way we are meant to be touched. And on top of that mountain, we'd hear every living being remind us we are the greatest. We are. We are so smart. We are so capable of doing everything and anything for ourselves and for anyone else. We are capable of doing what is and even what isn't. And I have known this since you first graced this world. And I have told you this since you first graced this world. But you don't listen to me, dear Emperor. You never listen to me. You think my age is frightening, terrifying, despicable. But do you know what is truly scary beyond all reason? It's that you will not even make it to the age I am. That's it.
Great. Thank you for such wonderful words. I never know how to react. How do you react to a poem?
Siri was just reacting, but
yeah. And I never know the appropriate way to react to a poem.
You bow down, you get on your knees, and you go, that was amazing, Queen Tiana. You go, all hail Tiana's poem. Mm. No, just kidding.
Well, hey, we've got one last thing we have to do, and that is rate our villain. And this week, I reckon we got to rate our villain. Tiana, how many llamas out of 5 llamas do you give Yzma today as a villain?
I give her 3 llamas because I think she had a really smooth plan to kill Cusco. It's very evil. Just give him poison, quick death, one and done. Pretty evil. But the whole like part where she turned into a cat, I feel like that could have been prevented. Mm. I feel like she could have made more than one human vial. And then that wouldn't have been an issue. So even though she's very detail-oriented and she plans a lot and she has a lot of potions, she could have just made like one more human vial and then she wouldn't have needed to use a kitty litter for the rest of her life. Mm,
that's a good point.
So that kind of downed her on the villainy. How about you?
I'm actually going to give her 3 llamas and 3 llama legs.
Okay.
Because you know what? You know what? I'm going to give her four llamas. And here's the reason why. Four full llamas. Because, you know, I don't know that much about her prior life, but she somehow worked her way out to become advisor to the emperor. She's super knowledgeable in potions. She can make all these amazing potions. And I have to believe that, like, that was a lot of work, a lot of time, a lot of energy. And she did come up with a great plan. And she did want to overthrow a ruler who was clearly terrible at his job of ruling, didn't care about the people. So she's got a lot of good things going for her. But the reason she's not getting... and her fashion. I forgot to mention that. Her great outfits, her incredible eyelashes. We never talked about that, but just an incredible look from this woman. But the one knock is that she has chosen such an incompetent sidekick. And we all love Kronk, right? He's a lovable guy, but he's not your guy for executing complicated, sophisticated plans. It's just, he's a simple man. He loves to cook. He wants to be a chef. He's not an evil mastermind. You gotta select better people. And if she had, I think it's very plausible that she would be emperor today if she had chosen a more competent sidekick.
True. But, you know, if I were Yzma, I think I would have chosen Kronk, too. I would have made that mistake as well because of his bulging muscles and his charm and his spinach puffs. And maybe she was like, damn, you're a good cook. Maybe she thought he was going to be good because he's so fit, you know?
She didn't even like his spinach puffs.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Anyways. But... yeah, you would. That's why you also would have only gotten four llamas.
Yeah, I think maybe she was just distracted by how fit he was. Like, oh, he's going to be a good one because he's strong. Like, he's physically strong and he's going to carry me everywhere, which he did. He did fulfill, like, the whole her riding on his back kind of thing through the wilderness. He did some things right, but yeah, those damn shoulder angels didn't help either.
Yeah. So. All right. Well... that's it for today's episode.
Yeah. Wait, I just want to say my favorite part of the entire movie is when the shoulder angels, so there's the evil one and the angel one, right? And the devil one says, look what I can do. And he does a headstand. and Kronk is like, well, I don't know if that makes sense. And then the angel is like, no, that's cool. He's got a good point. Okay, on that note... thank you, everyone.
Yeah, again, our new Patreon, which is very exciting, is patreon.com/nextdoorvillain. And as always, this episode is created by us, Joe Anderson and Tiana Hennings. We do all the producing and thinking and all the things that make a podcast. We do them for you. Thanks for listening.